The SBS Cycling Podcast is brought to you by Tanara.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast for our preview of the Tour de France 2025. I'm Christophe Malen, I'm your host, and I'm joined by the amazing Dave McKenzie. You're with me for another year, another trip around France.
Oh, gee. Good morning, yeah. I guess I'll say. It is morning, and good to be here. Can you believe it? We are here.
Yes.
We've arrived in Lille, yes. And the sun is shining. In fact, it's been beating on us for a few days, mm-hmm. Stinking hot. It's cooled off now.
We were a bit scared earlier on this week because the temperature reached 40 degrees in Lille on the 1st of July. First ever, the hottest ever 1st of July ever on record in Lille.
It was scorching. It was one of those putrid Melbourne hot summer days you get. It felt bizarre because, as you say, right up northern France.
Yeah, but
good to be.
Yeah, but we are here. And then, of course, we spoke to Caleb Ewan yesterday. We had a special and exclusive and a world exclusive, I would say, chat with Caleb Ewan. So if you haven't listened to this podcast, I would just incline you to do so. But today we are here to talk about the Tour de France 2025, 112th edition of this beautiful race. There's a lot upon us, and we're able, you and I, to catch up with a lot of the Aussies and some of the international riders as well. This is going to come up in the podcast. But first of all, Mike, 112 episode, if you want, of this series of the Tour de France. It's such a great event. It's always a buzz when you come to a tour, and I guess it's a buzz for people at home as well.
It's the biggest, isn't it? Yeah. We love the Giro.
It's the World Cup of cycling.
It is the World Cup. We love the Giro, we love the Vuelta. The classics are, a special breed of their own, but the Tour de France is the Tour de France, and there'll only ever be one. And you get here, all the world's media are here, the cycling media, that is, you like to think generally the best bike riders in the world are here. Most of them are here.
Well, the best of the moment are here, anyway.
The best of the moment. And it is. It's just a big hype. It's just a big, big hype. The team prez was huge. Massive crowds, And it's not just cycling fans. It's sporting fans that come out to see it.
Yeah, it's always a special moment, those team presentation. And it's also, I correct me if I'm wrong, because you've done more Tour de France than me. Actually, nearly double up the number of Tour de France than me. But they're getting a lot more organized.
Yeah.
But this organization doesn't kill the vibe. In a way, they're still quite fun. They're still quite relaxed. All the riders are still expected to be relaxed and fun. But how much pressure is that on the riders that day? Because there's a lot of media. There's a lot of obligations that you don't normally do even anywhere else. Maybe you do this on the other Grand Tours, but you do this three times a year.
It's another beast. That's right. But the riders know it, and when you sign up,
The deal.
When your ambition is to do the Tour de France, whether you're a domestique, low-level rider, because you're not, anyone who gets to do the Tour de France is in a special, special echelon. But they arrive on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, like us, we arrive a little bit earlier. By the time you get to Friday, you just want
to get going.
The whole entourage, not just the riders, the staff, everyone wants to just start the event because you've put all this prep and planning. So for the riders to get all that media attention out of the way, it's almost a massive relief, I'd imagine.
Yeah, so what have we learned from meeting those riders yesterday? So we know there are 10 Aussies around this year, which is a great number.
Good,
not the highest,
contingent.
But far from being the lowest we ever had. In 8 different teams.
Yep.
So it means that there's not one team. Yeah, there's a good speed, a good spread. On teams that have a lot of different cultures as well. And it's important, the culture in a team.
It is. Massive. And, it's interesting. It's the whole culture of, and let's say the European teams, it's changed over the years and it's continually changing. And a lot of these European teams, they're trying to become more international and have even foreign director sport ifs. So what I mean by that is, you have a Dutch team, they don't necessarily want a Dutch director sport if, or they might have one.
Only the French have a French team.
The ones, and not every team, but a little bit behind, I'd
100%.
Say. Yeah, 100%. And it's, I suppose it is a criticism, but you've got to keep evolving, don't you, as teams. And now, we were talking about it last night at the team press, I think we were talking about languages. And I was chatting to my good friend Phil Bryden, who works for NBC. He's an American guy who lives in Europe. And he said, NBC won't they'll only do interviews in English. Yeah. So they won't show subtitles. And we were like, that's crazy, because of course here at SBS, we prefer English, obviously, but we'll show them. And so the whole sport has evolved. Nowadays, most of the French, most of the Spanish, most of the Italians, they all speak a bit of English.
Yeah, absolutely. You take Lenny Martinez is absolutely fluent. You take, you'll hear about Julien Alaphilippe in a few minutes in this podcast. He speaks English. So it's true.
Probably 15 years ago, like I'm on 19, when I first started, you didn't always get that. No. It was difficult. Mm-hmm. It was tricky. So it's amazing how it's evolved.
Yeah, and before we move on, I would say there's one French team that seems to be evolving a bit faster is the Decathlon, the G2R.
Yeah.
Maybe because they had the influence of someone like Ben O'Connor last year. They were able to have their leader not being French, which would be unheard of at Groupama FDJ, for example, or Arkea. You don't dream about this.
And that maybe, that evolution of that team, tell me otherwise, possibly started when Bardet left.
Yeah, I think
so. And not
so.
Because Bardet was part of the problem. It was just that he'd been there for so long. He was their sort of, you know, their leader.
Poster child.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. And so when he left, it allowed him, he wanted something else.
Yeah.
And it allowed them to sort of peel the Band-Aid off.
Yeah, 100%. And I think for me, on that chapter, I think they're the most modern French team around. Yeah. But that's just maybe an external vision. Yeah. I don't know. In terms of the Aussies, there's also four rookies. So 40% of this contingency has never done the Tour de France. I know you haven't done the Tour de France, but you've done the Giro. How do you feel when you are on the verge, the eve of starting a Grand Tour? Something that you... and these guys are young, so they dreamt about it all their life, because their life was 18. The last 18 years was on TV. The Tour de France, there was no problem to catch the highlights thanks to SBS and so on. So they grew up with that race, and now they're on the verge of starting it.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, again, you know, the evolution, you know, of the sport. I think it's changed, and they're more ready, I suppose, physically. Psychologically, mentally, you know, the preparation nowadays is so much better. I think that's a given. So I suppose they're ready to go, because they've been racing against the riders they're going to race against for the next 3 weeks already throughout the year. But the enormity of it, you know, we talk about the team prayers, the media, the presence of, you know, the crowds, everything is so much bigger. So there'd definitely be some anxiety. Some riders obviously would have more than others. Other riders will be taking it in their stride. You know, I think Luke Platt, he's debuting. Yeah. But he's off the back of a successful Giro for him.
It's actually, if I may say, when you sit back a second, if you don't really know the sport in depth, it's really strange that Luke Plapp has never done the Tour de France. I mean, you know, you understand why.
And he's still really young, but you feel like
he's been around the block a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
and he's about to start his first Tour de France.
Yeah,
So you're someone like Luke Plapp, and I mean, let's talk about the part of the contingency. Jayco, Alula team, and slight diversion on the subject. How lucky are we in Australia to have an Australian licensed team? There's so many countries in the world that have riders, but they don't have a team. Venezuela doesn't have a team.
Yes,
you know what I mean? I'm not even sure Italy's got a registered team here at this Tour de France.
That's a good point.
You know, Australia has.
No, that's right.
Australia has.
We should never take it for granted.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we should. Yeah, and we talk about the, you know, the generosity of Gerry Ryan over 30 years in the sport, and it will end one day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nothing lasts forever. We know that in life and even in sport, but we should never take it for granted, because
you're right. There could be, and there will be a day where Australia does not have a
registered
team.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it might not be for long, but there will be a period where we may not have an Australian registered team at the tour. So, no, we've been blessed, and you know, to go on top of that, it is the first time we've got an Australian leader vying for a spot on the podium
in an
Australian team. Yeah. So that's huge in itself. That's historical.
We'll hear about Ben O'Connor in a second in the package that we'll play with the main Australian that we talked about yesterday. But good point from you mentioning this. How important it is for Ben O'Connor to perform well in this first week, be ready for the mountains to come, because we know this is where he will be at his best, of course. But Ben O'Connor looked chill yesterday, and he had some good words for his previous team. We thought there could be some animosity when he left the actual Decathlon, the G2R. But he had some really good words of Mike about how he caught up with everybody and all was good.
He left on good terms, didn't he? And he gave him a bunch of good UCI points in that final year. Like, he had amazing success. So, no, he's chilled.
Remind people that the Vuelta, he did a long stint in red, leading and scoring points.
And then
points.
He finished second, didn't he, overall? So, no, it's important for him. It's important for him. His season has been solid so far without being off the charts.
I thought
that's good.
I would have said he'd been up and down. He's been quite up and down this start of the season.
Yeah, but I think he's had more solid performances than not. So, but he needs to deliver.
Yeah,
he needs to deliver for the team. They're not really in the relegation zone, but they'd like to be higher.
Yeah,
they're missing Michael Matthews. Mm-hmm. We know Michael Matthews was having a pretty good season, but now he's got to take a force break because of health reasons.
Medical leave.
Yeah, and that's how Plappy has come into the squad. But I see that now, Groenewegen as the sprinter, and then, of course, O'Connor as the GC guy. Now they've just got two clear objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Ben just needs, he really just needs a couple of guys to help him get through the first week. And when I say help him get through, survive the crashes, stay out of trouble, you know, not lose any time.
Crosswinds if there is some in Normandy.
That's right. Mm. In a lot of ways for these GC guys, the first week is the most dangerous, I think.
Yeah.
You've either got the legs or you haven't in the mountains. Whereas here, you can have decent legs and you can crash.
Yeah,
you can crash
100%.
We've seen it.
So Luke Plapp is the road captain. That's I think we can discuss this. No, you don't agree? I would say he's a road captain, but okay.
No, I'd say Durbridge.
Durbridge is
11, okay. 11
yeah,
tours.
Okay.
Durbo's the man that will...
I get your point.
He'll have a cool head. Mm-hmm.
Durbo's back from a collarbone that he's done just before the Classic, so he's missed out on all the Classics, but didn't he look beautiful yesterday with that jersey of national champion?
Yeah.
He was proud of it as
well. Yeah. He'll be super proud to wear it for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
But he'll... And that's someone who Ben will rely on a lot on the flats, not so much the mountains. But he will be a key man for both, for Groenewegen and for Ben.
And in that role, is that for us, if we read between the line, we can say that Durbridge will not win a stage at this tour? Or things need to fall his way a certain way, which could be hard for the GC to take, because that would mean Ben O'Connor is nowhere near the GC if Durbridge win the stage.
Yeah, that's right. You almost don't
want him to.
If there's anyone we want to see win a stage, it's our mate Durbo. But
that would come with a price.
It would come with a price, probably. So all things considered, and if it's a success for Jake Alula, Luke Durbridge will spend a lot of kilometres on the front.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we want. And if that's the case, that means they're having a successful tour and they're chasing victories.
Yeah. What can Luke Plapp do as well?
Yeah.
Because first tour, are they going to let him test the water? Because the reverse of my question is, is he the leader of the future? Are they investing as him as a leader of the future
on a
Grand Tour?
Look, I would say, without knowing his contract in terms of dollar figures and how many zeros are on the end of it, he has come at a price and they are paying him to win, and they're not paying him to win national championships anymore.
Yeah.
He's won 3 national road titles. He's now got a Giro stage win under his belt. That's good. And they want more from him. They want to get more. So he is absolutely a big part of the future for Jake Alula. But I think he'll play a role in some ways similar to Luke Durbridge. He'll be on the front a lot. He'll be playing a role, and will he get his opportunity?
Yeah,
hard to say, but he'll also potentially play in the sort of mid mountains. He could play an important role for Ben O'Connor.
Yeah,
you know, in those lower slopes. Yep. So key role.
Watch this space. Okay, let's listen to a good contingency of the Australian here at the Tour de France.
How are you?
Good.
3 Aussies. It's nice to have some company on the squad.
I know, it's just nice to be with Aussies again. I think you move over here, and I spent 4 years with Aussies there, so kind of getting, it's not getting back to your roots per se, but it's familiarity, which is just, it's kind of comforting. But yeah, I think there's a bit more fun involved, because in the end you're with your, I guess, Aussie comrades.
Yeah, yeah. And we talk about it, I'm sure it probably hasn't been talked about much in the squad, but it is the first time in the existence under, you know, the team that Gerry Ryan started, we've got an Australian, yourself,
yeah,
vying for GC honours. It's historical. Do you let that play into your mind a bit and you use it, you know, to motivate yourself, or is that just behind in the back door?
When you're in the race, absolutely not. I like the idea, though. It's super cool. It's something that I think when I was younger would have been actually pretty sweet. I mean, I remember watching like Gero, you know, winning tour stages in the other jersey, and then you see the other years when it was Yatesy and Daryl Impey. But yeah, they weren't necessarily then Aussie. Caleb, obviously, but I think it'd be cool if I can come out on the other side having done a good result, and I think you'd feel extra proud for the country itself, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And how much do you rely on someone like Durbo, number 11 for him? He's got a wealth of experience, and if all things going well, he'll be on the front for quite a lot.
Yeah, he's got a big, big job this year, because he is the engine room, and he had the split job of working for a world-class sprinter, and then you also have protecting me on GC, so he's in for a big week. He's done it before, though, and he's one of the strongest guys in the bunch, so he's actually someone I'm rooming with this as well, so you got that familiarity, another boy from Perth, and it's just one of those things that it's not so much a dream come true, but it's such a nice feeling. It's really hard to say.
Nicely.
That's it, number 11.
Do you feel old?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. Especially when I asked, we've got three in the team that have done their first Tour de France, so yeah, it's pretty special, though.
And yeah. In the colours too.
Yeah, that doesn't get much better, actually. I didn't do it in 2013 when I was national champ, so I'm really happy now to do it again and late in my career, but it's nice.
And first time, you've been on this team since its inception. First time we've got an Aussie GC guy on an Aussie team. At this race, it's a big deal, isn't it? A little bit historical for Australian cycling.
Definitely, it's a big deal for us. We're not treating it lightly, and look, it probably it's weird. It's taken this long to happen, but it's really special to have Ben on the team. We work really well on Tour of Swiss. He's in some really good shape, and we're open for a really nice 3 weeks, and have Plappy here as well. Three Aussies in the Jayco team, and. Yeah, it's exciting. You know, Ben's done it on the big stage here before, not just here, Vuelta, Giro as well. So, we'll be giving our best, and hopefully we can make people back home proud for us.
And a lot of Ks on the front, hopefully.
Yeah, we've got a lot of work to do. Yeah. Bitten boy, maybe. But, that's all good. It's like, that's the role I like to do. And, we've got a lot of opportunities this week for the team we have. Sprint, opportunity stages, GC. Pretty much at the Tour, you go throw all your eggs at it to get some success here, and which has worked for us well in the past. So,
debut after an awesome Giro. Feel good?
Yeah, feel good. Wasn't exactly expected to do the Tour this year, so I mean, it's super exciting. Not, I guess, having that stress of building up and just being able to really enjoy it. But it's pretty amazing out there, isn't it? It's a lot bigger bike race than I've been to previously.
So when did you start to get an inkling, or when were you told that you were coming to the big one?
Same time Bling got crook. So what's that, about 25 days till the race. So with the Giro in the legs, it actually is fine to have that prep. Just sort of fine-tune the Giro legs, really.
And good team. There's a good chance, stage one. You got the man behind you. First time we got an Aussie on an Aussie team as a GC, big hope, so it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, just as a group of guys in the bus and in the hotel at dinner table, it's an amazing group of guys. I don't think really you could put a better group of guys together to have some fun, and I think that's going to be so key for the weeks to come. Dylan's obviously won 6 stages, I think he said today, here, so he knows how to win it, and yeah, I think all of us just want to see Ben do really well, and we're all here to help him get through the first 10 days and then let him do his stuff in the final week. So it's super exciting having him in the team. He's excited, and hopefully we can make something happen somewhere along the way.
And who's feeding the cows?
My mates are back home feeding the cows, so I mean, I told myself if I want a stage at the Giro, I'd get some alpacas, and if I can get a stage here, I'll get another farm animal, maybe a donkey.
Good motivation.
Yeah, yeah, nice one. Good luck.
Beautiful. Thanks, Macca. Cheers.
Jared, how was the atmosphere out there today?
Yeah, pretty incredible. Last year was in Italy, but in France this year, it's something else, you know, all the fans.
And how are you feeling going into this Tour de France? You're fit, strong, you're looking good, so how do you feel?
Yeah, form is really good. Had a long training block, altitude camp. I haven't raced that much, but yeah, a little bit calmer and more relaxed than last year. And yeah, just keen to get into it, you know.
Bit of a veteran this year, second Tour de France. What are the team's goals and what are your goals for this tour?
Yeah, stage win will be great for the team. With Arno coming back as well for the second year in a row. We've got a good lead out for him. Also, we've got more options in the mountains this year with Lenny to go to some stages. And for myself, yeah, be a bit of a road captain again and nail those lead outs.
Good stuff. And any breakaways or all for the team this year?
Yeah, if I can take my opportunity, I will for sure. I'm feeling a little bit stronger than last year. I've had a couple of grand tours in the legs now, so if I can take my opportunity, I will. But first things first to the team, as you know.
Jack, Rob, and we've got our apprentice here. What do you think about that?
No, it's nice to see Caleb on the other side of the fence. I was worried I wasn't going to be able to see him much when he hung up the wheels, but it looks like I'll be seeing him quite a bit these like next couple of weeks.
And advice for the man debuting?
Oh, obviously, it's going to be an interesting experience. The Tour de France is like no other race that we do throughout the year. It's the biggest one, and there's a lot of extra pressure involved. There's a lot more commitments, like you guys are here. But I think the most important thing is to try and enjoy the experience, soak it all up, and I'm sure there'll be plenty more to come.
Rob, how does it feel? It's been a journey for you, and here you are at team presentation. Firstly, how was it up on the stage?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Like, I think this is the best cycling has to offer, and everything we have is the best here. So it's super cool to be here, and yeah, I'm looking forward to getting the first stage underway. And I mean, it's a super cool atmosphere. Yeah.
And ambitions? What's been the talk amongst the team so far?
I'm going to be leading out Phil. I don't know what place in the lead out yet. It might change day to day because the courses aren't that straightforward. So we need to analyze them and see how to arrange things and also look after our GC guys, which is going to be crucial these days. So yeah, my role is more of a support role here. But I'm looking forward to it, and I mean, you never know. There's always opportunity to do something special here. So,
how are you feeling, Jack? How's the form?
Yeah, it's coming along. I think it's starting this Tour de France in a bit of a different role than the other ones I've done. We're coming here obviously with Lenny, French, and very ambitious, big investment from the team. And obviously, it's his second Grand Tour. The first one with FDJ last year, I think, was maybe not what he was expecting, and he has a few nerves around this. But I'm sure he'll be totally fine. We saw him win a stage just now in Crotone Dauphiné. Then we have Santiago Buitrago, 10th last year. Really wants to try and improve on this, and then my role is going to be trying to help these guys sort of through the next couple of 3 weeks, especially Lenny, sort of getting him to understand what it means to be a bit of a leader in a team and all the extra expectations, all the extra stuff that comes with that. And then obviously Santi is getting more and more experience, so he's a bit easier to work with now, and just trying to put him in the right places at the right time.
Harry, Sween Dog, Sweeney, second Tour de France, how are you feeling?
Super excited. We've got a really good team for stage hunting here, and yeah, I'm in really good shape, I think, career best, so I'm looking forward to seeing what I can do.
Yeah, for sure. You know, your first Tour de France, third on the stage, do you think you can go two better this year?
I hope so and I believe so, but to be honest, I don't really know. I think last week in Swiss, I really surprised myself. I was fifth in a mountaintop TT, so yeah, I don't know. I think I'm here with open eyes, and I think I'm going to surprise myself.
And are there any stages that you picked out in particular, or are you just kind of going for anything that comes?
Honestly, anything that comes. I think it's going to be hard to pick out particular stages, so we're going to have multiple guys trying to go up the road almost every day. We also have two sprinters here that will be able to, yeah, I think, be... yeah, up there in the finishes, but we don't really have a dedicated sprint lead out. So, yeah, as you know, it's a bit tough then, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, you've done some lead outs before, so I'm sure you can help the boys out.
Yeah, I mean, we won in Swiss with Albanese, so yeah, we did the last 15k on the front, so I think we can be up there for sure.
So that was some of the interviews we could gather yesterday. In there, you've got Drizners. Drizners is a I love him. He's such a polite guy, such a nice person around. He's coming here for his second Tour de France. Last year, he was a rookie at the Tour. He's in a team, Lotto, where we had a good representation historically with the Aussies. Yeah. In this, Cadel Evans was there. Caleb Ewan was in that team, amongst others. What can Drizners do? What is Drizners' job here? Is he one of the protectors of Arnaud Delis?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd say his role is similar. And, you know, what resonates me with Drizners is actually the comments of Victor Campenaerts last year, who has now left that team. But he spoke so glowingly about Drizners. And for a guy who was a rookie last year, Campenaerts was talking like him as being the most calmest and most mature guy on the team almost in terms of feeding the sprinters towards the front. He had a really cool head. So they've obviously got a lot of confidence and faith in Jared, and he will play that super domestique role for Delis and, you know, potentially other riders. But I also see someone like Jared Drizners on a good day with good legs actually getting his opportunity.
Yeah.
I think someone like him, you know, more so than someone like Plappy or Durbo, because of, you know, Groenewegen and two strong leaders with Groenewegen and O'Connor. Whereas Drizners, yes, they've still got a great team, but he could have an opportunity, you know, in the second or deep into the third week. So, yeah, I think prospects are good for guys like him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you've got Stenard as well that we just heard about as well. Same thing, first tour. Bit of a chaotic few last years. We're not going to go down into too much detail, but there was a bit of chaos.
But what a journey. And isn't it great to see.
But that was what I was going to say. Like, what does that mean for him to be here? Oh. Because the road's been tough. And it's been tough legally. Yeah, there's been some problems along the way. And again, we're not pushing them off.
Yeah.
But for him to be here today, what a result already. And what a team. He's in Bahrain as well.
I'm wrapped he's here.
Yeah.
I'm wrapped he's here. And he's a pretty quiet, humble sort of guy. But he knows he's got a big job ahead of him.
Yeah.
He's here for Phil Bauhaus, the sprinter. And then, of course,
Lenny
Martinez to protect him on the flat roads. And
he's alongside Jack Hegg as well.
Yeah. And they seem like, you know, listening to Jack more so, you know, they are all here for Lenny Martinez. Yeah. But look at that team.
Like, if we take a second, look at the team here. It's one of these teams that are pretty solid. You've got Lenny Martinez as a leader. You've got Jacquet. You've got Stenard. You've got Butrago in that team, for example.
Yes.
This is already a team in the mountain. You know, Jacquet in the mountain is very good as a lead out in the mountains.
Yeah. Mahorich
in
there. Bryce.
Look at that team. Honestly.
It is a strong team.
Yeah.
And so if they can get a good synergy going, and, you know, and this is another one for Martinez. For him, it's, again, surviving that first week.
Yes.
You know, surviving the first week, surviving the flat road, surviving the chaotic sprint finishes, you know, not getting caught up in crashes and things like that, and then let him free to fly in the mountains. So get excited, Mr. Malay.
I am. And then you know why I am as well, because we'll take a short break now. But after, maybe, did I speak to Julien Alaphilippe? I did speak to Julien Alaphilippe, but that's coming up straight after this.
Tanara is Australia's leading alternative asset investment firm. From venture capital and private equity to public markets and credit, we proudly partner with business founders and companies to help them grow their businesses and create value for investors. Led by John Wiley, former chair of the Australian Sports Commission, our team brings deep experience and a shared passion for Australian sport and cycling.
Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. Maka, we carry on previewing this Tour de France 2025 with you. Before the break, I just spoke about Julien Alaphilippe. it's really, really good to see Julien back at the Tour de France. He wasn't here last year. He changed team. Last year, he had a different program, but this year he is here. You'll hear in the interview, I asked him the question because he knows the region pretty well. His wife, Marion Rousse, director of the Tour de France Femme, is from here, from Lille, actually. So he knows the area pretty well. But before we hear from him, how good is it to see him in a Tudor team that looks pretty stacked up as well, with our very own Michael Storer as well?
No, it is. It's a great team. And, you know, you saw how popular he is.
Oh, you could hear how popular he was.
That's right. We could hear it last night. I mean, we were waiting, and where the mix zone is to do the interviews off the team press stage. We're never near the team press. We're always tucked away somewhere. But we had the sort of, we were lucky enough that they were doing a pre-photo shoot, each team. And when Tudor rolled up and he rolled out, we had our backs to them. We could hear the roar of the crowd.
Yeah.
And I mean, of course, it was for one guy.
The riders that are the roar, there was him, there was Lenny Martinez, and there was Pogacar.
Yeah.
The three big roars were there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was true. And he draws a crowd, doesn't he? He draws a crowd. And, you know, that's and for Tudor, it's doesn't even matter almost how, of course it matters how he goes. For Alaphilippe, they want him to go well, but his presence here brings publicity to the sponsors. Yeah. So, of course, they had to bring him.
Let's listen to the great Lulu.
Julien, nice new outfit. Back on the Tour de France. How does that feel?
Yeah, I feel great. Super happy for the team, for me, to be back on the Tour. And, super excited to start.
It's a region you know well. Your wife is from around here. Yeah. What does city reminds you, and any memories here?
Yeah, I have some memories, and it's a beautiful city. Like, I don't know if you saw, but the atmosphere was amazing, and it's a beautiful place to start the Tour, and I'm happy to be here.
You've got a store in your team as well, and you have had the Polkadot jersey on your shoulders. Is it an objective for the team, either for you or Michael? Is it something you've been thinking of?
It can become an objective, yes, but for the moment, we have to take day by day, and we will see how it goes.
If I tell you there's never, ever, ever been an Australian winning the Polkadot jersey, does that bring it to mind?
It would be nice for Michael then.
That was a Julien Alaphilippe. Hey, this question, I'm not going to let it go away.
No.
The Polkadot jersey.
It's finally got some legs.
The planets are aligning. I'm sorry, the planets are aligning. Listen. Keep a lid on it. As we say in AFL football, just keep a lid on it. I'm with you. I'm with you. But and I think you're actually onto something. And we couldn't get the interview in, but you spoke to Michael.
Yeah.
What did he say?
Very funny, actually. Michael, I love Michael Sir, but
he's pretty dry and pretty straight.
Pretty dry, because I told him, hey, never, ever, ever, ever an Australian has won the Polkadot jersey. And his answer was, and I don't want to mimic him or whatever, but he said, now you're telling me this, it brings it front of mind. That was his words.
It's like a corporate. It's like you're in a. It's like you're in a boardroom.
It's like I'm back at SBS in
the finance team.
But like, joke aside, I think for me, it's a real question and a real possibility for a team like Tudor. If they walk away with a stage win, massive success. If they walk away with a jersey, specific jersey, that's another big win. So let's face it, they can't really get the yellow one.
No.
They can't get the white one because the young rider will not go this way. It's probably going to be Remco if we think about it.
Yeah.
Green jersey, unlikely as well. Well, there's one living here. Yeah. It's the Polkadot.
Yeah.
And that has to be an objective.
Oh, it has to be. I agree. Whether or not that is in the team, we don't know, but I agree with you.
Now they know, because I told Michael Storer and I talked Julien Alaphilippe, as you just heard.
I wonder if they're in the team meeting tomorrow morning and Michael says, puts his hand up. Look, what's been brought to the front of my mind? I was made aware. But no, what I did not know, and I asked him off mic just before you did the interview, is that I said, I wasn't expecting to see you here, because obviously he put a lot into the Giro. Yeah.
Michael Storer, you mean?
Yeah, Michael Storer. He had a bunch of crashes, but he said, no, the plan was always to be here since January. So he was always doing the Giro and Tour.
And he's not a rookie here. He hasn't won a stage at the Tour de France, of course, but he's won stages a lot of different places.
You know what I like? I like Matty Keenan's theory. He said it to me yesterday, I think, over lunch or brekkie.
You went to lunch without me?
Did I?
The penny drops.
Penny finally.
He thinks Stora needs to lose 10 minutes early on in the first week, and then he's out of GC. He won't be a threat. Because if he doesn't lose time and goes up the road, he's a quality bike rider. Mm. Some of these GC teams won't let him go. He loses 10, 15 minutes. He gets away in one of the first big mountain days, and that's where he can maximize his points.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it's got to be a real strategic thing. It's not something you can just like, oh, we'll give it a go. You've actually got to really plan it, don't you? And sacrifice other things.
And again, Tudor, if they want results, because they're invited to this tour. So if they want results that are on the result sheets, it's not going to be in a GC. I mean, no. Maybe a top 10 might be interesting.
You're right. It's a really good comment. No, and you're right. They're here invited. And even though they've got Alaphilippe, Matteo Trentin, you know, the list is stacked of quality riders, they need results. So in some ways, there is a little bit of pressure on them, and there will be, even the sponsors and management, Cancellara, they'll be feeling it a bit. Yeah. They go, we need to show ASO where we deserve our, where we're worth it. And because you're only as good as yesterday's result.
Yeah.
And yesterday's result, you know, Alaphilippe's best is behind him. We know that.
Yeah.
As a bigger star he is, they still need and expect results.
So. Mind my words, prediction number one. Michael Storer will be in a Polkadot jersey in Paris in the Champs-Élysées.
This could almost be a sponsored product in the pod, Polkadot watch. Or yes, it's something like that.
But I love that. As you know, I love that jersey, and it would be make my day, make my year if Michael Storer could win this one. Okay, let's move on to probably the main contenders because we have a main race as well to talk about.
Yeah.
The predicted podium is pretty much a podium of last year. This is where all the experts or so-called experts are seeing the race unfold, probably in the same order. This is how is the feeling. So before we talk about the battle between Pogacar and Vingegaard and how Vingegaard wins this tour against a machine like Pogacar, just take a second about Remco. Is Remco, or should Remco, I should say, still battle for the GC? He can't give up before.
Now, of course,
what is the realistic objective, and would a podium like last year be a successful? Would a third place like last year be a successful outcome for Remco Evenepoel?
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because off Dauphiné, he wasn't great.
No,
he was excellent in the TT, obviously, and he's
and
really...
this is why. Sorry to interrupt, but this is why I think Remco will be in yellow on stage five. TT,
I agree.
This is the yellow will be the bonus on the cherry on the cake for him.
Yeah, no, I think he's...
So what else?
Yeah, no, it's the jury's out for me
where
he's going to be in 3 weeks' time. The jury's really out. And the exciting thing about that, and I don't wish ill will for Remco, but the exciting thing about that is, and I'm sorry to go back to it, that this gives Ben O'Connor, and not just Ben O'Connor...
Opportunities.
They can shoot for podium.
Exactly.
They can shoot for podium because there are a couple of little weaknesses there. You just don't know.
Yeah.
You never, ever know in 3 weeks. We've said it.
Mm-hmm.
We said it. I said it at the Giro in commentary. I said it during the podcast, during the Giro. The thing is not over until it's over. And look what happened on the penultimate day of the Giro.
Yeah.
I know it's a different bike race, but the Tour is the same. Of course, the Pog is the red hot favorite. Vingegaard is a close second. And then the podium is open.
And we talked about it before in this pod, and we almost broke the news for Australia. The last stage of the Tour de France is not the last stage of the Tour de France 3 years ago.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
not a procession in Paris. It's something very different. They're going to have to go three times off the Montmartre climb that you saw in the Olympics. This is a game changer for the last stage. Whether or not it will be a game changer for GC, maybe not, but potentially.
Well, there's some big mountain days too.
Yeah.
There's some huge mountain days, of course. You know, just to rattle off two.
The Hautacam. The
Hautacam, Ventoux, and
Col de la Loz.
Col de la Loz, which includes the Madeleine and Glandon. So, yeah, those three big mountain days and summit finishes in their own right will cause splits. And, you know, on our walk this morning, chatting to our esteemed producer, Kath, you know, we're talking about Pog and we said, yeah, we want a close contest.
Yep.
What we don't want is a 5-6 minute blowout, you know. But Pog's human. We've seen him previously capitulate on a particular day here or there or a climb. So there's never any guarantees. As good as Poggi's.
No matter how good you are, if you're not immune to gastroenteritis or cold or COVID,
you got to stay out. Sure.
Right. Yep, yep, yep. You know, you can do everything right and have things not turning your way. So we're not wishing this on anyone.
No.
But this is also part of the equation.
And you, the listener, can be saying, come on, guys, it's already done. Here's the podium. Fine.
Yeah.
You go with that. All right, put your money down right now.
Yeah.
Put your serious hard-earned dollars down right now. I'm not prepared to do that.
Responsibly, though.
But no, that's right. You can't, because on a three-week marathon like this, it's more unique than any other sport.
Yeah.
And the variables are so out there. Mm-hmm. You know, a dog runs across the road, a spectator with a banner takes down 40, right? You know,
Opie Omni is back.
Yeah. All these things have happened before. So, no. There's no guarantees.
So, we're not going to talk too much about Pogacar. I think we'll have a lot of time to talk about it. Yeah. But here, this day, today, day before the Tour de France, how does Vingegaard win this tour?
Well, he's got to be better than this.
He's got to be.
And, you know, interesting, last night, I was chatting to my good mate. I call him a mate. He's still my hero. Dagoto Lauritsen, the legend Norwegian who's been here for Norwegian TV.
Who looks very tanned, baby.
Yeah, he always looks tanned. He looks fit too. And he said, who do you think's going to win, Macca? And I said, listen, we want a close contest. And I said, all I know is, what I think I know, is that Vingegaard is going to be a lot better than what he was at the Dauphiné.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think deliberately he was at that form at the Dauphiné.
Yeah, he didn't care winning the Dauphiné.
Yeah.
No care in the world.
Exactly. And I think it's a little bit of a bum steer. So I think he's going to be a lot better here. I think we're going to see a lot closer.
Question
contest
for you though here. Does he win this race tactically? More than just in the legs. What he has to do is to be as good as Pogacar, but maybe smarter. Is that where the race could unfold?
Yes. And we know Paul.
And can I just preface why I'm saying this?
Yeah.
If I look at the team itself, I'm not saying UAE team is by far a weak team. I look at the Visma who they have. They got Van Aert, they got Jorgensen.
They're strong.
They got Kuss. Should they have a strategy where they take this sort of B approach where they just keep everyone up on GC, everyone quite high on GC? So Pogacar has to cover 3, 4, 5 guys, not just one.
Yeah.
Just in case.
They're being aggressive. Yeah, I don't think so, because I don't think, of course, Jorgensen or someone, if he's high on GC, they don't want to let him get 2 minutes up the road.
Yeah, and Jorgensen, by the way, signed the contract until 2030 or 2029 as well. So he's here to stay at this
point. Yeah, so they don't want that to happen. But, you know, ultimately they know it's Vingegaard is the big challenger and really the only challenger. But I think you're right, Visma will win tactically if they're going to win, and Vingegaard will win tactically. He'll win with his legs as well. But we've seen Pog in the past. He's like a Jack Russell.
Yeah.
He'll attack, he'll chase, he can do it, and he gets away with it. So they will look for him to expose himself. I think they will look and they will hope that Pog exposes himself to them at a vulnerable moment in the race, and that's where they'll pounce. So they will wait for that opportunity, and they might only get one opportunity, you know, and that could be the killer blow, the killer knockout punch, if you like. So that's what they will be hoping and wishing and waiting for Visma. But they both teams know each other so well, don't they? So
what is the role of Simon Yates at Visma? He just won the Giro.
Yeah.
I mean, he's coming with a double GC. Yeah.
Well, he's riding a high, isn't he?
Yeah.
He comes here with no pressure. He's got to play a role.
Yeah.
So physically, he knows he's got a big job ahead of him. But he can afford to lose time in the first week. And I would imagine that's what he'll do. He'll lose a couple of minutes here, a couple of minutes there. I don't see them trying to keep him high on GC, because I see him so much more important later on in the mountains. Now, I could be wrong. They might say no. There could be the approach you just mentioned. Keep Jorgensen and Yates high on GC. But yeah, Yates emptied himself at the Giro.
Yeah.
So ultimately, UAE will say...
My foot was around Kuss, Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Van Aert.
Yeah.
Those are three guys that can really help Jonas Vingegaard, putting a lot of pressure on someone like Pog at the top end of the GC.
So,
and my thinking is not so much for Pog, but he keeps all the teammates of Pog without rest. They're going to have to watch out 3, 4 different guys.
Yeah.
The team itself. So put pressure on the team right now.
Yeah, they'll want to isolate Pog.
You like my theory?
Yeah, it's not bad. They'll want to isolate him for sure. or hope that they can. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be fascinating to watch. And I think we'll get a bit of an idea in the first 2-3 days.
Yeah.
Like the likes of, say, Yates. If he doesn't lose any time, then I'll say, okay, they actually want to keep Yatesy up there on GC.
Yeah.
Just as a plan B and as a decoy.
Yeah.
You know, or if he's lost 6 minutes in the first 3 days, we go, okay, he's just trying to stay fresh because they're going to have him for 3 or 4 key mountain days to play a super role.
What about the experience? Because now in that team, in Visma, they've got, of course, Vingegaard has won 2 Tour de France, but they've got Kuss that's won a Vuelta. They've got Yates that's won a Vuelta and a Giro.
Yeah.
Experience, how much does that pay off in these moments?
It's massive. And even the confidence off the back.
How many times did you have a team that had 3 or 4 Grand Tour winners in one team?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Kuss has been pretty quiet this year. Like, we haven't heard too much about him, have we? So I'm presuming he comes in pretty fresh. It's like Van Aert just got better and better as the Giro.
Yes.
So you'd like to think he's going to do the same here in terms of the role he'll play.
Van Aert was key in Simonier's winning the Giro. We said it.
And that's possibly how Vingegaard will win the Tour. Yeah.
So there are
he'll be in between mountains. Van Aert will be up the road deep in the third week. It'll be on a knife's edge. Who's going to win the race? And then bang.
So patience and aggressivity could win it for Visma.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Just to conclude this podcast, we need to talk about the first stage as well. Because there is a stage, 185 kilometers, stage 1, Lille to Lille. It's likely to be a sprint stage.
Yep.
Since 2020 and the win of Christophe in Nice, there hasn't been a sprinter able to win stage 1 realistically in a Tour de France. It will therefore be a battle for yellow as well as the sprint stage. Quick pronostic, and then how do you see this stage unfold?
Well, I'm going to go on our apprentice that we've brought in. I mean, he knows.
The certain Caleb Ewan.
Certain Caleb Ewan, and he's right. And I was asking him last night, and he thinks the top three, and I tend to agree, Jonathan Milan, who was debuting, the giant Italian.
Lidl.
Yeah. Lidl-Trek.
Lidl-Trek, sorry.
Lidl-Trek. Jasper Philipsen.
Yeah, has to be there.
We don't need, no introduction needed. And
Tim Merlier. That's what he said. And I think Tim Merlier, I agree with him. He looks fit yesterday in his European jersey. He's wearing a dedicated jumper jersey. Tim Merlier could be an interesting one.
And then you know, the next tier is Dylan Groenewegen, who we've talked about already, and that next tier of sprinters. So
now, how much would we love Caden Groves? Caden Groves. How much would we love Caden Groves?
Philipsen pulls his foot.
Yeah.
Groves is on the wheel of Vanderpool just pulls because he can pull longer because he's that good, and Groves slips off the wheel. It's not, none of that is out of the question. It's not out of the question. You know,
it's the Tour de France.
Hayden, we know you got to do your job, and you will. Yep. And you know, he knows that, but he'll be ready to pounce.
Question, actually, I need to look back at the stats or just simply ask Kino. Has there ever been an Australian wearing or claiming the yellow jersey on day one of a Tour de France?
That is a good, the only one that would have been Robbie McEwen,
but on a stage on
I'm
day
not
one?
Sure.
That's a question for Kino, or maybe it's ChatGPT.
Yeah, Kino, we have a quick ChatGPT.
Our first point of reference is Kino, and if not, we go ChatGPT.
Yeah, Kino will be more accurate.
Yeah. Absolutely. Look, Maka, I am so much looking forward. You can hear it. I hope we are pumped. We're sitting here in Lead. We are pumped, and we hope you guys will enjoy this podcast along the way. We'll have an episode every day available for you. Every day. That's why you paid the beatbox, my friend.
Also,
we love it.
We do love
it. It's a moment that you got to know, and I hope you hear it as well. It's a mother of brotherhood I've got with you.
Yes.
I just love it.
It's not, you know what we do love? It's not in the studio.
No.
And you, the listener, can hear that pretty quiet today, but we'll be high on a mountain somewhere. We'll be down a back lane. We'll be in a car park.
And not blowing up our own trumpet, but we probably are the one or only, one of only podcasts that actually are here. There's only a few or a handful of it around the world. Everything else is not.
No.
And we are the ones that are actually sitting on the grass, getting the sunstroke for you. But also be getting really close to the riders. Yeah. And if you have any questions, of course,
if you want us to take down the foie gras.
Absolutely. Any food questions, we're here. But please communicate with us. Anyway, this is the end of this podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And guess what? The next episode is when? Tomorrow.
Stage one.
Bye for now.
We'll be right back.
The SBS Cycling Podcast was brought to you by Tanara.